Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode 20, The Insult of Finbar. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. Now don't forget you can email us by sending an email to Gary or Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. And we love hearing from you, so do get in touch.
We do love hearing from you. Please don't be offended if it takes us a couple of days to answer. Our inboxes are overflowing, but it is important to us to answer each and every email.
Now let's move on to some news and views. Soon it will be the 30th of November, and that's St Andrew's Day. We'd like to wish all our Scottish listeners a happy St Andrew's Day.
Did you know that St Andrew is said to look after people suffering from gout, sore throats, stiff necks, unmarried women, women who wish to become mothers, fish dealers, fishmongers, fishermen, old maids and singers?
I did, and I found out. I did, yes. And
so what's the connection between old maids and singers?
Quite sure, actually, I have to say. Anyway, I found out quite a lot about St Andrew, and if you go to the website on the 30th of November, you will see a post all about St Andrew and his relationship to Scotland. Around midnight on November the 29th, the day before St Andrew's Day, it was traditional for girls to pray to St Andrew for a husband.
Oh.
Mm. They'd make a wish and look for a sign that they'd been heard. I wonder what the sign was.
Yeah, that's interesting.
What sort of sign would you look? Maybe threw fish at you or something with all these fishmongers and what have you. Did you know that on the 22nd of November it will be Thanksgiving Day in America?
Well, I knew it was coming up soon, but I'm ashamed to say I don't know that much about it.
Well, I didn't either, so I did a little bit of research.
Cool.
And here's the thing. Here's what I found out. In 1621, the Plymouth colonists and Wampanoag Indians shared an autumn harvest feast, which is acknowledged today as one of the first Thanksgiving celebrations in the colonies.
Ah.
It was actually in keeping with a long tradition of celebrating the harvest and giving thanks for a successful bounty of crops, related to the celebrations of Harvest Home and Lunasa in Europe.
Oh, now that's great. So there's a link to Celtic mythology in Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So happy Thanksgiving to all our American friends.
Yes, have a happy Thanksgiving and try not to eat too much turkey. Anyway, let's move on to the story. You've been teasing us with all this business about milk pails. So tell us all, what is this story really about?
Right. Well, this is the first part of a two-part story and is another allegorical tale about the coming of Christianity into the world of the ancient Celts. For the first time, we meet the mighty Manannan Mac Liar. Long after the sons of Mill arrived, the Tuatha De Danann were still having difficulties settling their lands, and they summoned the ancient sea god Manannan Mac Liar to preside over them. In the house of Enga's Gog, a beautiful maiden is insulted and can no longer eat mortal food. In the days unnumbered after the arrival of the Sons of Meal upon the green shores of the Emerald Isle, the men of the Tuatha De Danann were in turmoil. Their houses were sundered, and new houses arose. They journeyed to the edge of the great waters and called to the powerful Manannan Mac Liar for aid. The horns boomed out of his kingdom, rolling over the waves, and ancient and wise, almighty Manannan, seaborn, shift shifting as the waves came to settle the problems and counsels of the Tuatha De Danann. His advice to the warriors was to scatter and make themselves homes in the hills and plains of Erin. The men chose Bovdurg and Manannan to be their rulers, and Manannan arranged the settlement of the nobles in their magic dwellings within the hollow hills. Bovdurg was to be at Sheepweave or Lake Degert, haughty and proud Midir at fair-sided She Truim, amiable Shimal at She Niantar of the Shining Form, Finbar Mither at Bear-topped She Mither, Dag Mor, son of Nuadar, at the She of Druim Dawn, Avartak, son of Ilahar, at She Bwydh of the Fair Summit, and Fagartach at the most lovely She Finabrach, Ilbrok at She Eda of Asuro, Lia, son of Lugi, at Verdant She Finacha, Durg Diansgotach at She Cleti. From every great house and place of residence left to the Tuatha De Danann, Manannan assigned a special dwelling to each noble. He made for the warriors the Fair Fiar to slip unseen through the worlds of men, the Feast of Goban, after which drink the princes would not age. And he brought them Manannan's swine that could be killed by the warriors, but would come alive again. Manannan taught the nobles their heritage at She Bru, and to carry on their households in the manner of the peoples of the fair-sided Land of Promise and fair Emain Ablach. The nobles conceded to Manannan that when they had possession of their dwellings, he should preside over the wedding of every house and the feast of every lord, so that his statute and due and law were over every mansion. There was another ruler in Erin at that time, who was not so haughty, and Elkmar was that warrior's name. With him was Cebre Cromfil, son of Sigmar, son of Cebre Crom, another ruler, and also his foster son, Engus Og, the son of the Dagda. Engus had his home in the brew over the Boyne, and when the nobles of the Tuatha De Danann came to visit him, he undertook to hold a feast in his house. Bovdurg, the son of the Dagda, was sent to fetch Manannan and the other nobles of his house to come and eat at that great and famous feast. It was the custom of Manannan at that time to make a round of visits to every she he guided, and when Elkmar heard he was on that round, he sent his foster son Engus to meet him and invite him to the feast. Manannan came following the light of the glowing hill of Asuro, and then on to Irluachair, until he came to the dewy green shining bank of the Boyne. He arrived at the head of his hosts and gazed upon the wonder that was the brew. There was a burnished bronze floor spreading from door to door with sculptures of gleaming marble adorning the alcoves. He saw beautifully crafted silver couches with swirling posts, shapely edges and cunning corners to them. And on each corner sat gloriously coloured birds singing sweetly. Manannan went inside and took his ease, listening to the jollity of the youths and the merriment of the maidens at their brightly coloured weaving and the noise of chess being played. The beauty of that house cannot be captured with mere words, and the only thing we can say is that the rulers of the Tuatha and the nobles of the Land of Promise were all there. And there was not one of those princes or lords who was not envious and jealous of that house. Elkmar took thought and counsel, and called his servants and his head steward, the Honourable Dicho, to come to him, and this is what he said.
Go for me, my good people, to the ravines and cataracts and river mounts of fire to seek fish, fowl and venison for our noble guests.
Dicho went along with his good son Rourke, and the princes sat down to the feast. Manannan sat with the warriors. Bovdurg sat at his right hand, Elkmar at the hand that holds the shield in every fray. Echtondmor, Manannan's son, sat at the side of the palace, and Abartach to that noble's right, and Shimul Shitach to his left. And every man of the warriors from that on in the right place among his contemporaries. Engus was with the attendants arranging and giving orders, and every kind of drink and delicacy was given out correctly, so that the whole company were cheerful and gay. 3 days and three nights the heroes spent in this manner, and at the end of the fourth day, Manannan was obliged to clear the house, for after such celebration and ale, not a mother's son was left in the mansion with a spark of consciousness, except Manannan and Engus. He began to argue with Engus, and spoke as follows.
"This is a pleasant house, Engus, and I never saw its like, save Cruet in Naquan or Emen Abloch, and its situation on the bank of the Boyne at the border of the Five Provinces is good. If I were you, Engus, this house would be mine, and I would summon Elkmar to quit it. You should use the charm of luck and prosperity from your powerful friends to do it."
Manannan taught Engus that ancient charm, and after he addressed Engus again and said,
"Do you know, Engus, that of all of you of the Tuatha-De-Dananann who are alive, that I am the chief of your kings, senior of your hosts, shining light of your battalions, and lord of your champions? And though Elkmar be your tutor, yet it is I who am your tutor in valor, in feats of arms, in magic. I am also the foster son of your good father, the Dogda, and to any child of your father who has wealth, I have something else to give him."
"I'm glad you admit that. What is the reason this cairn of worship is so called?"
"I will inform you, and pledge your word, your crimson shield, your sword, and the fair adorable gods, that you will act on my advice this time."
Engus felt himself being swayed by his urgency, although he didn't quite understand what Manannan had in mind.
"You know, Engus, that it is not fitting that Elkmar rules here, and that it is not for him to defend the fort, or establish the lands and the lordship. We shall stand in this house before Elkmar, and do you summon him to depart with the charm of luck and prosperity. For that will bring to you good luck and prosperity, and to him misfortune and adversity and exile. Warn him that he may not come back to the house he leaves till Oum and Pillar be blended together, till heaven and earth are one, till sun and moon be as one light. Do you know, Engus, why mankind were first created?"
"I know not."
"This is the cause. The new god in these lands fashioned 10 orders of high fey around him. The lord of the 10th order grew scornful and envious in his mind, and they left the heavenly plane without cause. And the new god, to bring balance to the 10th order of his land, fashioned mankind. Those who left his land with scorn became the lords of the dark fey, and made their realms a dungeon and a prison for their torments. We are not of that origin, so act on my advice this time."
"I am sad to hear that, for the pleasure and honour of the house would be under my control, and its profits and substance mine, and foster sons would not be honoured after me if I do this thing."
"Do not think like that, for a king is nobler than a kingdom, and a lord than the heir. And control is better than assisting, and assured means better than doles. Your own will is better than your father's or mother's, or a request to either of them from behind their yoke."
That convinced Engus completely, and he said,
"The advice shall be acted on this time, O great Druid."
Later on, Elkmar was consulting his friends as to whether the king's dinner should be cooked by those messengers who went to seek fish and fowl and venison. It was the general opinion that the king should not be kept waiting for them, and that there was no shortage of good ale and mead. Manannan came into the house again, bringing fey trickery with him, and the hall was prepared by Elkmar for Manannan. He came into the Shee with his people, and sat with the warriors, and each one of them sat in his right place and natural place from that time on. They were eating their dinner and consuming their food, till all the company were merry and cheerful, save Engus only. For he was sick with fright at challenging his tutor. Yet nevertheless, He came before Elkmar at the moment Manannan had arranged for the challenge to be made, and wrought the horrible incantation in challenge of his tutor. He summoned Elkmar to leave the mansion without halt or delay. And after he called upon the powers of the charm, Elkmar arose quickly, wondrously, lightly, as rises a timid flitting deer when chased to the hill, or as rises the bird flock before a hawk. Elkmar went out of the mansion with all his people, both men and women. And when Elkmar came out on the dewy sloped lawn of the Boyne, he looked upon his wife and on his household.
It is pitiful and wretched you are now, dear people. You are reluctant to leave the Boyne and its land, and henceforth you will find great woe and final madness. It is treacherous Manannan, who taught the charm of luck and prosperity to my fosterlings by magic and dark arts, so as to banish me, and woe to him, but it is well for my fosterling after. I swear by my doom that had Angus begged the rule of the mansion of me, I would certainly have given it to him without being challenged.
After that, Elkmar left them, and Angus came out on the lawn and began to talk to him earnestly. He came to delay and stop him, for shame and regret had seized him. But he could not be delayed by reason of the power of the spell which Angus had laid on him. After that, Elkmar went forward, and before he was out of sight, the company had gone. At that moment, Angus saw Dichu, the steward of the mansion, his wife and his fair son approaching. They told each other their news, and the steward accepted Angus's protection. And Angus said to him,
"Remain in office, as you did not arrive before the summons."
I will, my lord.
And the whole superintendence of the house was once more put in his charge. It so happened that Dichu's wife was pregnant at that time. When Angus perceived it, he asked to be foster father, and they came together into the hall, and the chief steward asked for Manannan's friendship, and so it was done. The nobles inquired of Manannan where Elkmar would find rest.
"I know not, and no prophet or sage in the whole world knows."
Then Angus held the feast of the mansion in honour of Manannan and the nobles of the Tuatha-de-Dananann. And when the time came at the end of the feast for the nobles to listen to the singing of the ancient stories, Angus said to him,
"Your wife is pregnant, and whatever child is born, I receive to bring up and educate."
"The child of every other member of the Tuatha-de-Dananann shall get the same."
And the voices of all the nobles rose in agreement. Angus encouraged all to follow his example of noble marriage. Manannan went back to his kingdom, and the time came when one of his wives bore the fruit of her womb, a shapely, lovely daughter with a tuft of curly, yellow-coloured hair on her head, for which reason she was called by the name of Kurkog, which means bushy tuft. She was given to Angus to bring up and educate, and daughters of other rulers of her own age along with her. As to the steward's wife, she bore a daughter at that time, and she was named Enya. And Angus took her like every other foster child to educate. A beautiful sunny house of varied design was made for the maidens, and they were there for a good while being educated. There was never before or after them a band of women so battle-skilled and so comely as that band of Kurkogs. One of them excelled all the others in appearance, in skill and in beauty, and that was Enya, the daughter of Dichu. There was no one who saw her who did not fall in love with her. It is she who was most pleasing of all the maidens to Angus, and the fame of that company spread to the four corners of Erin. The daughter of the steward was more famous than all the womenfolk, or even than Kurkog, and the nobles of the Tuatha-de-Dananann came to visit by reason of the fame of those women. Finbar Meatha came from the Shi of the Bear Hill of Meatha to the fort on the Boyne to behold those women. He was warmly welcomed. His horses and chariot were unyoked, and he entered the mansion with Angus, and they were drinking and making merry.
"It is good to eat with you, Angus, but I would fain see the famed women of the Boyne."
"Do you want to go to their apartments and see them, or for them to be brought to you?"
"Send for them. Let them come to us."
Angus sent word to Kurkog and her ladies, and Kurkog came to them before Angus and Finbar. Finbar gazed at Kurkog and all her ladies. He looked keenly at Enya, daughter of Dichu, And after a while, he asked a question. And then he also answered it, saying...
Who was it who made such a dirty mess? She is the daughter of the worthless steward, and I would have almost had her named Dirty Mess.
He then composed a verse.
The royal daughter of the Munster steward, the delicate, stately swan, is a woman of the race abhorrent to us who made the dirty mess.
After that, the maiden's lovely face grew white, then livid, then red. She went away sorrowful and troubled, with wet cheeks and flushed face, to her accustomed dwelling, the sunny house. And when Engus saw that, he became terribly angry, and he nearly killed Finbar and his people. He remembered their friendship and calmed down, changing his mind. And after that, Finbar set forth to depart from his home while at variance with Engus, and his people counseled him not to separate from his brother in this state. Finbar went back again to the hall, and went into Engus's presence, and bent low on his two white knees before his brother.
Why is this done, O Finbar?
Because you are the eldest and noblest, and I am the youngest of the Doctor's fair children, and because every criminal must make his own amends.
Then your apology is accepted, brother.
And they clasped each other warmly. The hall was got ready for Finbar and Engus, and Curacog and her ladies were fetched to the hall, and Engus and Finbar sat with the other nobles, and they put Curacog between them to do her honour, and Engus put his loved ward at his side, that is, Enya, daughter of Dichu. There was no lack of food in the hall, or of the best of drink, and there was not one of them who were not cheerful and satisfied, save Enya only. And there was not one of Finbar's or Rengus's or Curacog's people who did not kneel before her to oblige her to eat, and she consented not. Finbar feasted for 3 days and three nights in that fort. They said farewell on the third day, and Finbar went away to Knockmirtha, of delicate beauty. As regards Enya, she was 7 days and nights without touching food or drink, and if all the men of Erin were ordering her to eat or drink, she would not. There was no sort of food or drink in the world they did not ask whether the maiden could eat, and when they persisted, she would say she would not. And Engus bethought him that she would drink the milk of the dun cow, milked into a beautiful golden goblet. The dun cow belonging to Engus was so unique and remarkable that its like was not in Erin, or in the whole world, except for one other cow.
Who will milk her for me, Engus?
Take your choice of any woman in the house, including Curacog or yourself, fair maid.
Then I will milk her myself.
You shall get your wish.
So the cow was brought to Enya to be milked, with its halter of special silk, and with the beautiful gold goblet. The maiden washed her sharp, white-fingered, fair-hued, brown-nailed hands, and she milked the cow after that without delay. And she sat down with Engus and drank the milk of the dun cow straight away. At every mealtime the cow was brought to the maiden to be milked, and that milk was her food and drink, if all the food in the world had been brought to the maiden, she would have had none of it, save the milk of the dun cow only. And one day that she was milking the dun cow, she asked Engus,
"How did you find the dun? Or was she brought to the brew by Elfmar?"
"You shall know that. I went on a journey with Manannan eastward overseas till we reached the Golden Pillars in the east. We went from there to India and we found such a wonderful thing whose like we've never seen before. Two cows with twisted horns, always in milk. There was a speckled cow and a dun cow, and two beautiful gold goblets and two halters of rare silk along with them. We took them with us to Erin and we divided our gains. Manannan gave half of them to me, namely, a goblet, a cow and a halter. This is what you see before you, the dun of Engus. She is in full milk every season of the year, and her milk tastes of honey and intoxicating wine, and the satisfaction of good food. That is how I got the dun cow."
After that, Engus inquired of every druid and seer and sage and ruler in Erin why the maiden would eat no earthly food, save the milking of the dun cow only. And they couldn't answer him. The story reached Cruitinacuan and Emenablach and the nobles of the Land of Promise, and they were astonished at the story they heard of Enya in Erin. Mananan sent envoys to Kurkog and her ladies, and to Enya also in particular, to find out what caused her to go without food. And those envoys came to Brú na Boyne. So after that, Enga sent his loved ones and their entourage to Emenablach, and they came to the lawn of Cruitinacuan, and all the youths rose up to meet them. And Mananan with his nobles, and his wife with her ladies, welcomed the women, making much of the maidens. Mananan called Kurkog and Enya into a lonely spot, and said to Enya,
"Is it true you eat no food?"
"It is quite true."
"How comes it thus with you, O maid?"
"I know not save one thing. After the insult I received from Finbar, I could not eat earthly food, save milking of the dun of Engus, milked by myself into a golden goblet."
"I myself will prepare your helping tonight."
Mananan was a man of great craft. There was never a man sick or ill he did not discern and diagnose the damage, and he was healed by his aid. And there was never a man loath to food or drink to whom he did not restore his liking with diligence. Mananan went to his head steward and instructed that succulent flavours must be put in every dish prepared for Enya. And Mananan used all his powers on them. And he came with the ladies of the mansion into the hall, and dishes of every food and flavour were brought to them. Sadly, nothing was gained by that plan to make Enya taste it. And all who were there wondered why Mananan could not get the maiden to taste food or drink. Mananan wondered whether his power had disappeared. He felt dishonoured that anyone should be fasting in his house. So then he asked the maiden if she would drink the milking of the speckled cow, and she herself or some other woman to milk it into a golden goblet, as in Asia. And then the speckled cow of Mananan, the golden goblet, and the silken halter were brought to Enya, and the maiden milked her. The milk was her food and drink that night, and she was not weak in that house.
"Do you know why your maiden eats no food?"
"I know not."
"Then I will tell you. She is neither of the race of the people of Engus, nor yet of our people. For when Finbar insulted that maiden, her guardian Fae left her heart, and a new spirit came in its place, which prevents us searching her heart. And she worships art neither light nor dark. That is why she drinks the milk of our cow, because it was brought from a spiritual land, from India. And it is the new spirit that is nourishing and fostering of the maiden and watching over her. This is the nourishing of the House of Two Goblets, or milk pails. It is the spirit of the new god that this maiden adores."
Kurkog and her ladies and Enya were a month and a fortnight at Emenablach, and she tasted no food in that house save the milking of the speckled cow. And then they travelled to their own home, for though great was the mirth and frisking and the pleasure and the gaiety of Emenablach, it was time for Kurkog to be in the house of the Boyne. Mananan tried to delay Kurkog and repeated the poem.
"O Kurkog, of pure beauty, be not reluctant to remain. Thy nourishment every evening, the songs of the Land of Promise. You are the vast appeasement of every trouble, refreshed on its rough, clean, wave-loud strand."
But Kurkog could not be stayed. She went on with her ladies, and she bade farewell to Mananan and to his wife and household, and they travelled to Brú na Boyne. Engus came to meet them and welcome the company, and he asked news of them. He inquired of Kurkog what food or drink had Enya taken, or did Mananan know the cause why she did not eat?
"She tasted no food or drink during the visit, save the milking of Mananan's speckled cow. She was the stoppage of Mananan's great power. Food or drink would not pass her lips. Nevertheless, he recognized the cause why she would not taste the food on the Land of Promise."
"Tell me the cause."
"He said it soon.
And this was what he said. It is the new god. That is the reason she will eat no food of the Tuatha'de. And he said, when Finbar insulted Maiden, that she parted from her magic, and a spirit came in her heart's place. He said that it was the cause of her desertion, and that she belonged to no other people now, but the new people of the Almighty Monarch.
From the time of Eremon, son of Mil, the Maiden abode in that manner, to the time of Lagair, son of Njal Noigalach, that is the time when the Taelgin came to Erin. This was the Maiden's manner of life in that age. She spent a while in the house of her guardian Engus at Brunaboyne, and a while in Manannan's house at Emen Ablach, and she tasted no food or drink in the house of Manannan save the milking of the speckled cow, nor in the brew save the milking of Engus's dun cow, and she herself milking each cow into a golden goblet. After this, the nourishing of the House of Two Goblets was magnified throughout Erin by the Tuatha'de Danann and by the Sons of Mil. And it was also called the Fosterage of the House of Two Milk Pails. And that nourishing is proverbial still, and shall be forever. In our next episode, we find out what happens to Enya after Manannan makes his judgment.
So let's have some listener feedback. We received a lovely email from Nick, and he says,
I need to say thank you. You've helped me and no doubt others in great ways.
You're more than welcome, Nick.
Perhaps I should explain. You see, some years ago, my path led me to the understanding that I was to study the way of the shaman, the Celtic shaman to be more precise. The realization came hard, and with much turmoil. After a good year of pursuit, life got in the way, and to my regret I have done little with it since, although it's always present in my spirit. I know that to start this study will mean a great time commitment, and frankly I've been a little wishy-washy on committing the time. Every now and again I'll peruse the Society of Celtic Shamanism website, because it's through them that I wish to start my studies. It's there that I saw the link to your site.
Well, that sounds interesting, Nick. Good luck with your studies, and if you can, let us know how you're getting on.
For the last 2 days, except for sleeping, I've done nothing but listen to all of the episodes.
Wow, Nick, you must be getting totally fed up with us by now, but I have to admire your discipline.
Which brings me finally to the point. Your podcasts have rekindled my enthusiasm and refilled my heart with the love of the Celtic myths. For they are not just fanciful tales and colourful heroes. For me, like most of your listeners, it is a reconnection with my heritage and by extension to my own soul. It is a small fragment that was lost. You and your show have returned it to me. For that, I can never thank you enough. Because of you, I am dedicated to pushing on, and time constraints be danged. Please keep up the good work, as I'm sure it's impacting people all over the world, the same way it is me. May the blessing of Danu be upon you.
Oh, Nick, that's wonderful.
It is. Thank you so much, Nick, for your kind words. You are more than welcome. You cannot know how good it makes us feel to know that the stories of our ancestors are alive and well in modern hearts.
That's true. Good luck, Nick, with your path. Thank you for your blessings, and our blessings and best wishes to you. Have we got time for another email?
Yeah, I think so. Let's make the time anyway.
Okay, we've got another email from Steve in North Carolina, and he says,
I can't tell you how much I love the Celtic Myth podcast. I recently got caught up on the episodes and went right back and marked all the episodes as new on my iPod so I could download them all and enjoy them a second time.
Thank you, Steve. That's really kind of you. An idea that strikes me is you could always burn the episodes to CD. And that way save your hard drive space and listen to the stories whenever you want to. What else does Steve say?
As a typical lapsed Celt of the Irish diaspora, your wonderful dramatisations of the old tales have brought me close to my ancestral culture in ways I could never have imagined. It's also inspired me to find ways to incorporate my ancestral spirituality into my daily spiritual life. Please keep up the good work.
Thank you again for your encouragement, Steve.
Yes, Steve. Thank you so much. We will keep plugging on for as long as life allows us with these shows. I think we worked it out recently, and we reckon it will probably take us about 5 years to tell all of the Celtic stories.
Yeah, and maybe even a little bit longer. I just didn't know there was so much material. So many original tales still out there. And we're still finding them.
We are.
Anyway, let's share a couple of promos with you.
Good idea.
The first one we're going to play is for an online community that was founded this year, I think, and it's building up with some great resources and is a fascinating place to visit. Let's listen.
Make yourself comfortable while I tell you of a place that I frequented, which you may wish to visit also. This place is known by many who are Druids, or who are interested in Druidry, and they come from all over the world to meet and greet one another, share stories, tales, songs, and knowledge. This is a venue where you can share your personal experiences, your thoughts and ideas, places that meant something to you, hold the talking stick and be listened to, and join others as you walk the Druid pathway. It is here you have access to the largest index of knowledge on all things pertaining to Druidry, contributed to from all over the world, and which you can add to if you so wish. This place is open to all. There are no boundaries for those who wish to enter. However, you are expected to respect others and treat everyone as you would wish to be treated, something, of course, I'm sure you would already be aware of. So, my friend, what is this place? Let me tell you. It is druidicdawn.org.
Sounds interesting, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Mm. And finally, we have talked about Podio books before and the great stories they have. Well, how do you fancy a story about the ancient Celts, a romance, a mystery, a link across time, and a fascinating adventure? That's what you'll find in Arlene Radaski's The Fox. I've been listening to this one for a while, and I love the way that all of her imagery and similes come from an earlier time. Her research must have been phenomenal. Anyway, see what you think of The Fox.
Available now on podiobooks.com.
By oppression's woes and pains, by your sons and servile chains, we will drain our dearest veins, but they shall be free.
In The Fox, a podcast historical novel, Jonna and Laverne's clan lay in the Romans' path of destruction. The death of their people is a certainty unless a bargain is made with the gods, even if it means a human sacrifice. Will the trade the druid Laverne and his visionary wife Jonna make with the gods save their family? Will there be future generations to sing the songs of their dead? 2,000 years later, Ayn McCrae is on their trail. She's a struggling archaeologist on the verge of uncovering the village where Jonna and Laverne lived. She's found the farm where her site is located is for sale. But for a ghostly visit, Reed almost triumphs, leaving the truth in ancient stories buried forever. Listen to The Fox and discover if Jonna and Laverne's bloodline continues, and if Ayn wins her independence, finds answers to haunting questions, and allows a lost love to be rekindled. Visit my website, www.radasky.com, to learn more about The Fox.
Well, that's one I can't wait to hear. And so that wraps it up for us in this episode. Before we go, I'd like to give a shout out of thanks to Guild ROTT for their great review on iTunes. Thank you very, very much.
Yes, thank you. From both of us. And may you all have a lovely time until we see you again.
Slongerboil.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. You can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. We heard Haghole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.